6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Except, maybe not, because CanucksHockeyBlog.com is no more. I am Chris at Lifeforce, joined virtually, as always, by someone who is always here and never no more, Anna Forsyth at A4SA03. Welcome, Anna.
Thanks, I think.
That's better than the first time I tried to do it and I couldn't hear you, where I talked about like plugging in and turning on and stuff like that.
And let's just cut that.
Is that the show? Like, have we reached that point? Like, got to pull in HR again? That's a record.
You don't want to know what we talk about behind the scenes sometimes, listeners. It's, anyway.
You know, you say that and now people are like, what do you talk about? I kind of want to know. Is there a C4 after hours, C4 after dark, C4 off the rails?
Oh, yeah. Well, they used to be, and then maybe will be again, but...
We tease that, too, but really, will there be? I mean, we're both busy people.
At some stage, sure.
You are more optimistic than I. Speaking of optimistic, if you happen to be a Vancouver Canucks fan, it appears that optimism is something that is rewarded, except for maybe in the more recent few games, but still... There is signs that this Vancouver Canucks team continues to be good. I mean, if you think about it, 2 weeks ago, they were good. And we were kind of wondering, like, hey, where might they not be good? And it's like you and I knew what we were talking about. Because, of course, when it didn't become good, it was actually at the point where we thought that might be the case. However, it then kind of went a little bit awry. We obviously didn't predict too well as it ended up in this last week. But, hey, nonetheless, Canucks good. C4 awesome. I think that I got that summed up, right?
Yeah, that's pretty good. And we're just great at forecasting the Canucks' fortunes.
Well, let's talk about those fortunes in Rewind. So when we last spoke, the Vancouver Canucks were about to head out onto the road. They had decided it was time to book those plane tickets, fly out east for a spell, and find themselves in our nation's capital, in Ottawa, to take on the Ottawa Senators, where the Vancouver Canucks did everything in their power to give the Sens hope. At one point, was it like 20-3 in shots or something like that for the Sens? I don't know. It was some obscene number, and yet the Vancouver Canucks were scoring goals in every shot they took.
Yeah, it was kind of wild to think that, like, it was a 5-2 win, and Canucks didn't look great for it, and they didn't feel great. You know, there was lots of talk after the fact that it wasn't their best effort, and it's true, but that's a sign of a good team, no? If you don't dominate but still win.
And score goals 15 seconds in?
Yeah. I mean, both are good.
You know, Besser scores the goal on, I think, the first shot of the game, 15 seconds in. I don't think there was a shot before that. Ottawa then proceeds to go in and fire every puck at the net they could possibly handle. But, 2 minutes later, Mikheyev goes and shoots again. And interestingly enough, the Vancouver Canucks are currently 2-for-2 in the shots department and up 2-0. Good teams, as you say, are the teams that manufacture points on nights they should otherwise not get a single one. And maybe this game was indicative of the Vancouver Canucks being that quote-unquote good team. We saw goals from Miller, Petey, and a second one from Mikheyev throughout the game. And they were just having their way. Wasn't a good game defensively, yet... You know, when you have a pretty knockout goaltender between the pipes.
Right. It doesn't matter. That's telling, right? That the goals came from their top two lines, like their sort of their stars, quote unquote, and Demko making it work at the back. So it's...
Well, it wasn't Demko in net, though. It was DeSmith.
Oh, right. Sorry.
DeSmith got the start.
Because we did talk about whether... yeah, what would happen whether DeSmith gets a big test on Saturday against the Leafs. But we both kind of said we agreed that it would be Demko's big challenge. Mm-hmm. Which didn't end up working out too well. More on that later. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, DeSmith is, like, proving to be such a worthwhile backup, it has to be said. Like, counting on him to make those tough stops, so...
So Canucks get themselves 2 points out of Ottawa. They head into Toronto. This was the game that I had said was going to be the potential trap. And my theory was you have a Saturday night in Toronto, November 11th. Like, there was a lot going, you know, on as far as sort of the lights in the big smoke. The Vancouver Canucks, however, did what they had done in Ottawa. They came out and got a couple goals in the first period, albeit maybe not playing as good hockey as one would have liked. But going in the second, you kind of felt like, hey, things are being things, right? But the problem is the Vancouver Canucks, I guess, didn't realize that Toronto was not Ottawa.
No.
And when you provide a team like Toronto the opportunity to get easy goals, you make your ability to score goals yourself and in turn get those points that much harder. I mean, they leave the second, you know, down a goal. And, you know, unfortunately for them, Samsonov was just lights out. For most of the night, beyond that first period.
Yeah, and I think it's a real shame. It is the difference, the sort of leaders not performing. It's a shame because that was the spotlight game, like you said, but Demko didn't perform to the best of his ability. Hughes and Hronek certainly didn't, like, considering how dominant they've been and how well they play together, especially. So it's a shame because did Toronto do that well? They did okay. And they certainly did enough to win. But it was a kind of a case of Canucks letting them back in the game in the second. And once they were ahead, they were kind of battling uphill at that stage. And it's just because you'd say the narrative from the first period was like the tough guy act that Toronto were putting on wasn't working, right? They got 2 instigator penalties, which is just so dumb.
Well, the fact that you can get 1 instigator penalty in an NHL game is,
I know,
a unicorn, but it's 2.
2 unicorns, I guess. Hmm. Very brief off the rails. Do you know that the unicorn is protected by an act in the Scottish Parliament?
I did not, but yet I'm not surprised to hear that that's the case. So
there you go. Anyway, so it's just kind of, I felt like Bieksa was making a really good point in intermission, just saying like, well, it's just not worth it. Like, you want people to stand up for your teammates, but it's not worth it if you're like sitting in the box and letting the other team score power play goals. But then by the end of the night, you get people saying, oh, yeah, see, this is what it takes. You have to be tough.
I know.
And Canucks aren't tough, especially tiny baby Quinn Hughes.
Oh, yeah.
Who can't cope.
The narrative of this is just completely backwards. You know, yes, teams who are quote unquote tough, and I'm using the most sarcastic tone I can, mm-hmm, occasionally win games and occasionally win Stanley Cups. There is some truth to that. However, teams who are not tough have also won games and won cups. And in the recent era of NHL hockey, those teams tend to have quite a bit more success. Now, Vancouver got 2 of their goals on the power play and arguably had opportunities to cash in again and couldn't. Toronto rolled the dice and won. But 9 times out of 10, they roll the dice again and again and again. And the Canucks absolutely tear them apart.
Yeah. And obviously Nylander scored, but like the other goals were from the like fourth line, so I think the only thing it shows is the importance of depth scoring. Yeah. Like the whole tough guy narrative is so boring. Like, when was the last time a Leafs team, tough or otherwise, got past the first round? Last year, and that was it. Like,
yeah, they were already starting to plan the parade, just like we were back in September. So, Canucks lose to Toronto. They go into Montreal the following night and return the favor, if I could say this at least. Montreal was blocking shots left, right, and center, but that felt to me to be more indicative of the Vancouver Canucks coming out a little pissed off that they had lost to Toronto the night before, and Montreal just happened to be the unfortunate team to have to deal with that. I mean, getting goals from Garland Mikheyev and Josh Wall in the first period obviously goes a long way to set the tone. And really, the Vancouver Canucks didn't take the foot off the gas from that point onward.
Yeah. Like you said, that seemed they were pissed off, but not in a like directionless, angry way. It was, you know, a very focused, determined way. And yeah, I do think that Connor Garland really, that was a kind of statement game of him, how he has forced himself into the conversation again and been, well, yeah, one of the more dominant players of late.
You know, a little bit out of rewind here, Garland's play has now raised the possibility that Beauvillier is the player as to which the Vancouver Canucks might look to move, because they've decided originally it was Besser. Oh, we can't do that anymore. And the way Garland's playing, well, I mean, I don't think anyone would want to pay the price that they would have to pay to get him. So who do we have left?
Yeah, exactly. And obviously the Elliot also mentioned Nils Höglander a couple of days ago on Twitter. So who knows? Can you please, just because it's the only good part of the rundown that I have written, can you please read out the beginning of the Habs game summary?
5 foot Garland plays a 200 foot game. DeSmith is decent and PBJ line is tasty.
It's the best part.
PBJ? Get it?
Well, that's great, but also because Connor Garland is small. Did you know that?
Yeah, I've heard rumors.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think what his height is in the Canucks media guide. I remember there was some discussion around if they had pulled out the ruler with skates on or.
Yeah, that's the thing. I tend to think those are much exaggerated.
Mm-hmm. Anyhow, Vancouver Canucks, they go out east. They get a possible 4 points from six. That's not a bad road trip, especially one where you're quickly out and quickly home. Except for the Vancouver Canucks, they were coming home to take on the Islanders, who happen to have a former Vancouver Canuck by the name of Bo Horvat returning to Vancouver for the first time since the trade, and then addressing the crowd in Long Island, Brooklyn, or wherever the heck they play. I can't remember anymore. By saying that New York has the best fans and Vancouver is pretty quiet, which, in fairness, during his era here, was pretty true.
Uh-huh.
And this conversation, though, precipitated a question of, do you boo him or do you cheer him? And I'm going to share my thoughts first. I know you were at the game, and being, you know, part of the Larshiders, probably have, you know, some thoughts as well. Bo Horvat was a dutiful captain during his tenure here. I did not want to see him go. And when he was traded, it wasn't as if he had said, trade me, I want out. He got, for one way or another, you know, taken advantage of. You know, told one thing, shown another. That sucks. However, my thought is that when a player like him were to go elsewhere, you celebrate their return and everything they had done for you, and then you boo the living daylights out of him every time he touched the puck to remind him who we are, which I feel is what occurred. Got his, you know, cheer when he was announced in the starting lineup, got a standing ovation when they played the tribute video, And I heard noticeable booing every time he touched the puck the rest of the game. And to me, that's the way it should be for everyone.
Okay. So, I mean, I'm fairly similar to you. Like, one, I don't think I have still a huge amount of respect for Bo, despite what you said about the Rogers Arena crowd, which was partly a product of his time then, partly a product of Rogers itself and the way that maybe the Canucks in general interact with their fans. And I do think, like, he worked really hard as captain and before he was captain to lead the team on and off the ice. So I, like, he definitely wasn't perfect, but I do have a lot of respect for him. I was never going to boo him when he touched the puck or at his tribute video. To me, I don't know if there's, like, I get there's a slight difference.
Were there boos during the tribute video, though?
No,
like,
no.
I mean, that didn't come across in the broadcast.
Or at least none that I could hear. Mm-hmm. To me, I don't know if there's a great deal of difference to me. Mm. Like, when I feel like if you're going to boo when he touches the puck, I don't know if there's a difference to me. I also just, I guess the thing that annoyed me with the narrative about booing him or not was just the moral high ground that some press would, like, media people would take about it. Just like, oh yeah, like, it's so disrespectful, he gave us all for the team, blah, blah, blah. And to me, I'm just like...
Certainly did. I had someone actually tell me on, I think it was Threads, that what he did is Ryan Kessler level.
Wow. Which, I mean, I think that's harsh. But that's the thing, I boo Ryan Kessler.
Oh, I do too.
I don't know if I got a chance to see him come back to Rogers after he left Anaheim. But yeah, like, I am in favor of booing Ryan Kessler. I don't think there's anything wrong with booing players. Like, it's part of the fun of being a fan. Like, if you don't want fans to be tribal, then, like, that's just what sport is. Like, if you want fans to be passionate.
You have the teams get together at center ice, everyone throws their sticks in the middle, and then you just toss a stick side to side and play a hockey game.
Yeah, exactly. Just, like, it costs so much to be a fan of hockey, especially a fan of the Vancouver Canucks. Like, if your fans are still passionate and not apathetic after all this time, I think you should be thankful, whatever form it takes. Mm-hmm. But it was, like, as a human being, it was very moving to see that Bo was affected by the cheering and that he appreciated that recognition.
Yeah, and I, you know, to add a caveat to me booing him when he touched the puck, that is my response to him talking down to Vancouver fans. He's right, but, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it was a cheap shot
nonetheless.
Yeah, like, it's like, you know, someone once said, like, you know, what about family? Like, you know, sometimes you have an idiot in your family. Damn straight, and I'm more than willing to call them that, but you call them an idiot, let me tell you, we've got problems, right? That is sort of in line as to why I would boo Bo Horvat. But that's only in that situation. Yeah, you were great. You're a dutiful captain. I wish you were still here. You're not. You said something you probably shouldn't have. And I don't forget. Because if there's one thing us Canucks fans do, we hold a pretty good grudge.
Yeah, like, I did. I was listening to Too Many Men earlier today. And I think this was before the Islanders game. But Sarah Sivian was just making a point of, like, Canucks fans find it hard to even enjoy success because of how much we've been hurt in the past, which is very true.
There's a lot of fan trauma.
But yeah, I totally agree with that. I think no matter whether it was true or not that Rogers Arena was quiet whilst Bo was there, it was a cheap... Oh, it wasn't a classy thing to say.
Whether you're right or not, you don't talk about family that way.
Yeah, and enemy of the show, Why Aren't, did write a funny headline in the stanchions to that effect. So,
The game itself, though, was an interesting one. And I think if you look at the last 2 weeks, this game is the one that has me thinking the Vancouver Canucks are the real deal. Yeah, okay, sure. Good teams get points out of Ottawa like they did. But Vancouver was down... not so much early, but down They couldn't keep themselves out of the penalty box. I think it was Ian Cole. Was he the unfortunate one?
Well, unfortunate, yeah. He two penalties in a row. I mean, one of them was delaying game, which we do.
Still.
It's a stupid penalty, but yeah.
And so you have the Isles up, 2-2. Miller comes out early in the second, also on the power play, 2-1. But Bo Horvat, like 4 or 5 minutes later, scores to put them up 3-1, celebrates like he, you know, has won a portion of the cup.
Yeah, and brief sidebar to that is that, like, as morally sanctimonious as hockey can get, they don't talk about the non-celebration thing, which is a massive thing in football, where you're not supposed to celebrate if you score against your former team because it's disrespectful. Even, like, players who have only played in the youth team. So I'm glad that's not part of hockey, I have to say.
Yeah. But what was interesting is that old Canucks, and when I say old Canucks, probably the last decade, that goal from Horvat means game over. It's a done deal. Mm-hmm. You got close, but you're just not going to get close enough. Turn out the lights, try again next week. But this Vancouver Canucks team's like, no, we're going to actually amp it up a little bit more. Besser brings them back within one on the power play late in the second period. And the Vancouver Canucks go into the intermission with a little spunk. I mean, I don't know. I mean that in the good sense. Like there's something that they have available to draw upon going into the third period. And in the third period, they do everything that they possibly can to drive the Islanders nuts. Case in point, Andrei Kuzmenko, who decided that he wanted to show the New York Islanders how awesome of a player he is by drawing not one but two penalties in one stoppage, only to then try to eat the puck during subsequent five-on-three advantage. But puts the Vancouver Canucks in a position where they can get a goal, tie it up. And during the broadcast, which is, again, DT, you never go and say, oh, hey, I think this team is going to go and possibly take the lead on this power play. No. You tempt the hockey gods, DT.
Yeah.
But the Canucks do tie it up. Yeah, he is. With Roenick's 190-mile-per-hour shot.
Yeah, I think it was 190. Thank God that wasn't Kuzmenko's face in front of that one.
Okay, so a couple things. The Kuzmenko injury, puck comes in. I don't know if it hit something, but it goes right up. And the way it looked is it looked like it went under his visor. It didn't. It hit him sort of in his mouth. There wasn't blood initially on the ice, so then you're thinking broken bones, but you see a little blood stain on the t-shirt. Didn't dress the next game. He does come back. The pictures of him are gruesome, and how he came out of it with a bruise, or I think the sports term is a contusion.
Bruise. Yeah. I mean, you never want to put someone with a head injury on a plane. Even if it is just like bone related, like the pressure would be bad. So I think they were very right to be cautious on that. Does look bad. I don't understand hockey players at all that he's just refused to play with a full cage like he was supposed to. Like, said he couldn't see the puck well enough, but I was just like,
You're about to lose your face, dude. He's playing the odds. The puck won't hit the same spot a second time.
Yeah, lightning doesn't strike twice, except it does sometimes.
But the Philip Roenick shot initially was measured as like 107.9 or something, which would have been the fastest or the hardest shot in an NHL game ever, though they have subsequently determined, due to equipment errors, it's not 107, it's like 101. Boom. Still a hard shot. But this goal ties it up, and that takes us into 3-on-3 overtime, where the Vancouver Canucks decided that they wanted to win it. Now, this is actually nothing new. The Vancouver Canucks have been a very good overtime team. We've seen this out of them. I don't know what goes on when they suddenly are 3-on-3 hockey, or if it's just a ton of space, or they just YOLO it. But They had a couple opportunities, but the one that ultimately was the icing on the cake was the dirtiest pass I've ever seen from JT Miller, splitting the defenseman through to Quinn Hughes, who takes it and proceeds to score the goal to say, "I am the captain now."
Yeah, it was beautiful. I literally screamed "bull" as he did it, because that is my natural reaction as growing up as a football fan. But it was so good. It was so pretty. Yeah, I thought that was a really good goal. The crowd went wild. But just another testament to the East Coast being asleep when Quinn Hughes does stuff. I spent all night refreshing the stats, and it wasn't until the next morning that the scoring leaders changed to all three Canucks. So.
Interesting. Well, nonetheless, Vancouver Canucks, they win a game, they get 2 points, they win it in a way that you would have otherwise not seen from this team in recent years. This team is good. So they got in a plane again to go to Calgary, and they lose, and they lose bad. Like, this game was, the Canucks look sleepy.
Yeah.
I mean, someone that said tired, I'm like, no, tired means worn out. They look sleepy. Like, they didn't look like they were awake. Yeah, sure, Petey scores a goal to take an early lead. But then the Vancouver Canucks just didn't have anything left in the tank. Markstrom was on point, and ultimately the Flames just didn't let the Canucks back into it ever.
Yeah, I mean, I can very much identify it. Might be the two beers I had at the game, but I fell asleep on the bus on the way to netball, so... I was also feeling very sleepy when the Canucks were playing this game. I'm not, like, super worried about it. Like, it really wasn't a good game, and Canucks looked rough. But I also was just conscious of them having to play overtime and then get on a plane to Calgary and, like, play a game at 6 the next day or 7 Mountain, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
They just didn't look good. And, you know, fine, teams will have that on occasion. And you have to consider they've come back from a road trip. They've probably, you know, not had an opportunity to recover. They play in a very emotional game against the Islanders. They win it, and win it in very exciting fashion. Immediately have to head back out on the road, go into Calgary. Calgary is actually starting to look good again. And the Vancouver Canucks had to play them after playing at home the night before. So again, like, there wasn't a lot going for the Vancouver Canucks. But when they come back home to play the Kraken on Saturday, this game disappointed me a bit.
Yeah.
That's not to suggest that Vancouver should beat the Kraken every time they play them, especially here in Vancouver. But the Vancouver Canucks made mental errors and mistakes, which again could be a sign of them maybe being tired, worn out, run down, whatever it happens to be. But even in the third period where they're down 2, it took until really the final minute of the game for them to actually look like that good team we saw earlier in the month. The fact that the final, 15 seconds of the game was the most exciting part of the third period should tell you a lot. They got a goal. They had, 10 seconds left? And on the broadcast, they're like, they'll have to have a miracle. And it only took, 4 seconds to get a face-off in the offensive end. And the play that they had drawn up almost worked out. But this is the Vancouver Canucks suddenly just taking charge. There's a part of me that wonders if Höglander scores that goal with 20 seconds left, do the Canucks get another the way they suddenly just turned it on? If they had played that way throughout, it's not a 4-3 loss.
That's the thing. It's like they lost by one goal and they almost scored in the last few seconds tied up. Like, we shouldn't be mad at that game, but I am totally with you. I was. It was just so sloppy. Like, it wasn't good hockey from either team, which I think is why some people are not... I saw my timeline wasn't too downbeat about it, but to me, I was just like, Rick Tocchet's team doesn't do ill-disciplined like this, or they shouldn't. Like, that's what's kind of stood the Canucks apart, so it just felt like old habits, right?
Mm-hmm. Again, are we nitpicking the Vancouver Canucks, like, over the last 2 weeks? They've lost, what, 3 games? Toronto, Seattle, Calgary? Yeah. That's actually not bad. I mean, all things considered. But that loss to Seattle does give me some concern, simply because of how sloppy it happened to be. If, however, there is a, you know, silver lining in all of this, they do get to stay at home and play again Monday night. You might be listening to this show before watching the game. And Anna, do you know who rolls into town?
Is it the pick-me-up San Jose Sharks?
It is. Now, I shouldn't, you know, look at the Sharks and say, oh my goodness, this is a must-win game.
They beat the Oilers.
Right. Yeah, they did. They beat the Oilers. That's what I was getting at. Since we last saw San Jose play the Vancouver Canucks, they've since picked up a few wins. And not by a few, I mean they have a total of 3 on the season. But they're not that good. And if the Vancouver Canucks are good, this is a game that should have the Vancouver Canucks regain the confidence that they had possessed, you know, a week or so ago, or on last Wednesday. They then head out back on the road, though, because, you know, that's the way the Vancouver Canucks season has gone. And they go down to the great state of Colorado to take on the Avs on Wednesday night. They're then back into Seattle for a game against the Kraken on Friday night. And then the following night on Hockey Night in Canada, they're down in San Jose. Now, that's going to be fun because if I understand correctly, and maybe it's changed, I don't know if the Vancouver Canucks can actually land in San Jose, or is it Anaheim that you can't land late at night?
Oh, I have no idea. I did hear that Rick Tocchet doesn't like doing that, though, and he tries to...
like fly in the day of?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well,
which,
regardless,
to me, doesn't seem better, but apparently no. It is. They've figured it out.
At least it's the same time zone, Seattle and San Jose. But the Vancouver Canucks do have in front of them an interesting week. You'd have to think that the first game against San Jose at home is a game the Vancouver Canucks win.
Perfect timing, really.
Right? Then they have to go on and take the Colorado Avalanche into play. That is a team that's not that bad.
Yeah. And have you heard they play at altitude?
I have heard that. So that can come into play, especially if the team is still feeling a little worn down, tired. They go into Seattle. Seattle is not a pushover. And Seattle may try to exact another sort of pound of flesh out of the Canucks. But what worries me is that second San Jose Sharks game. Of all the four games in front of us, that's the one that concerns me the most. That is a trap game.
I was just like, don't say the word. Don't say it. Don't say the T word. Yeah, that does worry me a bit. And it's just funny looking like at the next week. We have 2 challenging games against Anaheim and Vegas after that. But it's just like, yeah, it's going to be like a tough week. 4 games. Some travel. Yeah, I do think that is a test as well. It's funny to say it as a test game, but yes. Toronto was a test. Canucks didn't pass. They have rebuilt somewhat since then. Next Saturday is a test for sure.
What do you look at? 4 games. How many points?
I mean, you've got to figure they win tomorrow. And I think they'll win in Seattle. Just revenge. So
you're giving them 4 points?
No, I'm going to say 6.
You're going to say 6. Okay, so which
they
is
lose
the...
in Colorado.
Okay, I was going to say, is it a loss or you giving them 2 loser points?
No.
Because I'm giving them a loser
point. If they make it to overtime.
Point.
Okay, fair.
I'm giving them 5 on this road trip. I'm going to say they're going to beat San Jose at home. I think that they'll beat the Kraken. I think they'll lose to the Avs, and I think they get the loser point in San Jose.
Okay. Let's see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that we do seem to be both in agreement that Colorado could be quite a challenge. But yeah, with the confidence boosted by a win against San Jose, who knows?
Yeah, that's very true. What are your thoughts? How are the Vancouver Canucks going to do this week? Let us know in C4 Discord, discord.io/C4podcast. We're going to take a short break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? And that? Because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
It is Movember, a month as to which I used to go in. Grow myself a mustache. I am not doing it right now. I haven't done it actually for a couple of years. To be honest, I keep forgetting to do the shave, and then it's like I feel guilty, and so then I don't, because that's a very, you know, piss poor reason. But if there's something that has been synonymous with hockey forever and a day, it's growing a mo. Doesn't have to be November. Some players just
it's a good reason.
Grow everything, come playoff hockey. But come November, it is Movember, raising money for men's health initiatives. But in the rundown, you had asked, who's got the best stash? And I had actually commented like, I don't know if I've been paying close enough attention to which Vancouver Canuck or Canucks have been growing a mustache. Though I did see on first glance the picture of what's his name's bruise? Now that I've forgotten the name off the top of my head.
Kuzmenko,
thank you. I'm getting old, Anna. Yeah. I thought he'd grown a goatee, and it's like, whoa, man, that's a bad-looking goatee. And then I saw that, no, that's a bruise. Because it's just all, like, between, like, just under the lip, but entire chin, right? Hmm. It's almost akin to the Mike Gillis, darkest timeline goatee.
Oh, God, yeah. That was rough.
But what are your thoughts on the Canuck stashes?
Well, first of all, I'm going to give a shout out to our good friend of the show, Anders Lau, loyal listener, who suggested this topic. He suggested it before an article from friend of the show, Daniel Wagner, came out ranking the Canuck stashes. So this wasn't taken directly from Wags, but Wags's article gives us a good opportunity to, I would say, correct the record. I think Wags is given too much credit to Petey and Besser just because they have blonde hair and it's hard to grow a visible mustache if you do. To me, I'm like, Connor Garland is just head and shoulders in this category only above the competition. His mustache is beautiful. It's so well maintained, it suits his face. So to me, it's Connor Garland all the way. And I don't particularly like JT Miller's mustache, but I do think it's probably second place because it's just dark hair and it's kind of there. And I think he did start in October though, but
Well, yeah. I was glancing at pictures. The first thing that came to mind is that Petey, I don't know if he's allowed to grow a mustache because it just makes him look older. Like, it doesn't look right. Besser,
it looks sketchy.
I'm kind of disappointed in his mustache considering the flow that he normally rocks. Like, it just feels to me that he's got someone else's mustache on his face.
Yeah, but it is he doesn't have blonde hair, so again, it's not as blonde as Petey's maybe, but like he has Disney Prince hair. It's kind of hard. To make that stand out. I think Bess is marginally better than Petey's, but neither of them are good. Teddy Bluger's is decent as well, I would say.
Yeah, Bluger's mustache looks a lot like sort of mine does, where there's not a whole lot of sort of body to it, but it's noticeable in there.
Yeah, and I would say, like, I do think Teddy Bluger's face needs something. Like, it doesn't, like, it looks better with facial hair for sure. And there's just something about him that, like, his name, his demeanor, it suits having facial hair. So I think the whole thing works, but to me, there's just no competition at all. Mm-hmm. Connor Garland, you are the winner of this, in my eyes.
Oh, very clearly. Like, I agree with you. He's got the best stash. I also do want to point out, Wags is using probably the best mustache scale of all time. Score out of 5 of Harold Snaps' stash. I mean,
yeah,
Harold. Excellent. I grew up in the era where Harold Snaps was still patrolling the blue line for the Vancouver Canucks, and he was easy to spot. He wore no helmet, and all he saw was a stash.
Yeah. So. To me, like, Harold Snaps' mustache would be only secondary in sport to Merv Hughes, who was a Australian cricketer back in the day and just had the greatest mustache. So, listeners, please look that up, because he was just king in that area.
You know, there needs to be a resurgence of mustaches in sport. Like, not for a particular month. You'd stand out. Like, you'd be noticeable. I'm not saying every player should do it, but there needs to be a player or two that does, and you know it's them because you can tell.
Yeah, because I do think it should be few and far between to me. Like
if Garland were to rock that stash all the time, I mean.
Yeah, like, I think
you honestly, should just, I think it would help improve his game.
I think so. And, mm-hmm. Yeah. Although I think last year people did notice that whenever he shaved his face, he played better. Is that right? Someone correct me if I'm wrong on that. But it doesn't really look right. He looks like a baby. But yes, I remember, great cause, like, very important to raise awareness about men's mental and physical health initiatives. I was just looking up some statistics for International Men's Day, which is today as we're recording, yesterday as you're listening to this. Yes, suicide is a massive, massive killer in men, especially young men. Testicular cancer often goes undetected because men aren't checking, that kind of thing. So two of many initiatives that kind of fall under the Movember umbrella, but important things to think about.
Agreed. It's one of the reasons why I got involved in Movember and would really try to spread the word through the few medium that I had access to. I do feel badly that I don't participate as actively as I used to. But it's definitely a great cause. To change gears, I was going to say slightly, but maybe quite a bit. What's going on with the PWHL, Anna?
Well, I guess it's not a complete left turn in the fact that we're talking about more awareness of issues and equity. Let's put it that way. Okay. But it is a slight left turn in that I'm not really talking about anything serious here. But we saw the team colors and the jerseys come out. They got a lot of flack on, you know, the site formerly known as Twitter. I liked quite a few of the concepts, particularly Montreal, which I think has a couple former Connecticut World players, so I'm thinking about directing my attentions there. So I don't mind them. But at the same time, just a lot of what's coming out has been quite disorganized. In terms of, this is supposed to be happening January 2024, and we don't really know where everyone's playing yet. We only found out the team names a month ago, less than that. So I'm constantly in two minds with it, because I think a professional league deserves to have scrutiny and criticism. But at the same time, the people who are coming at it with good intentions, like women's hockey supporting people, and people that think women's hockey does not deserve its place on the professional stage. It kind of comes out as the same noise, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily have an answer to this because I was a watcher of the PHF. Like, my team no longer exists, so I wasn't necessarily the most supportive of the PWHL, but somewhat inevitable, and I do want to give it a good shot once it starts, even though it's not been the most promising so far.
Yeah. So what little I do know, and this has more to do with the fact that I haven't heard much about it that's fallen into sort of the mainstream, which is part of the struggle. But what little I've heard is that as far as teams are concerned, there's some thought that they don't have team names. And if you don't have team names, you're not going to be taken seriously. I mean, by, the Montreal such and such.
I've already forgotten what they're called.
Right. Are there names? Because from what I understand it, everything I've seen is, that's the other part. It's like Toronto, Montreal, New York, Ottawa. Like, they're focusing on the cities.
Which they are. But yeah, there was trademark filings, almost a month ago, for some pretty terrible team names, including the Boston Wicked.
Wicked!
Yeah. So Boston Wicked, Minnesota Superior, Montreal Echo. Is that Montreal Echo? I thought it was Toronto Torch. Yeah. Ottawa Alert. And New York Sound. So, yeah.
Yeah. But January was when they wanted to get underway, was it not?
Yep.
You would think if you've trademarked names, those were truly the names you were going to go with, you wouldn't be waiting until the last possible minute to do your brand announcements, would you?
Yeah, it seems strange, honestly. And I'm a big fan of singular team names. The Kraken, the Avalanche, the Lightning. I like that. So I was prepared to like these, but Minnesota Superior are the only ones that I kind of even like.
Is Minnesota on Lake Superior? Is that?
God, I hope so. Otherwise, then what the heck?
Like, I don't know my geography well enough just from the top of my head to know that that's the case.
Right? It must be.
I'm looking at Google Maps right now just to...
I mean, honestly, I went to Chicago last month and that was me figuring out, I knew it was on Lake Michigan, but,
That one's...
Just how big Lake Michigan was.
That one's easy. They're on Lake Superior and a bit. I mean, I guess they're, a portion of Lake Superior, but I'd say, the state of Wisconsin is more Lake Superior than anything, but anyhow, whatever. But again, I mean, I don't know. I'm not trying to discount it, because at the end of the day, does it really matter what the names are in my mind? No, it's about the opportunity and then the play on the ice. But I think it just feels that I don't know as if it's being rushed.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because it was always going to be such a disruption, right? Because the PHF, would cease to exist, once it was bought out. The women's hockey, what was the PWHA, right? And Dream Gap Tour would cease to exist. So it just... I don't know. I always knew it was inevitable. You can't have two leagues forever. But I do wonder if they could have had one more season of the PHF, one more chance for the Connecticut Whale to win the Isabel Cup before, it all finished. So we are where we are. So we've just got to hope that the product on the ice is something worth cheering for.
Has a broadcast deal been announced at all?
I don't know the answer to that. I feel like I should. Because obviously PHF was on ESPN Plus in the US. And I believe, and TSN, KZ in Canada. But yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Because one of the things that would need to occur, and as silly as it might seem to be, is being on linear network TV. Like, if they're gated behind app walls, it's like, oh, watch the, you know, latest game between Montreal and Toronto on TSN Plus.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just did check, and it was, they're closing in on a broadcast deal as of 5 days ago.
Yeah.
And the goal is for every game to be televised, and for it not just to be televised in US and Canada, but people around the world might have subscription access or however that works.
Yeah. And I'm not suggesting that, like, every game has to be on the TV. That'd be great. But having showcase matches or games, mm-hmm. or a game of the week or a day of the week as to which, you know, I can sit down, I can tune in. If you have all of the other availability online, there is some balance. I get there is business involved here too. But if it's gated behind an app, the harder you make the product to be found, the less likely someone will tune in.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho. Well, again, league's supposed to get underway in just over a month's time. Hopefully we'll have more to talk about before that. We'll take another quick break here before we dive into the F word.
He liked to say the F word.
Oh, then get the f*** here then. Yeah. Okay, see ya.
Oh. He's going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you a explanation about it. I can't.
You out of hand.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
News broke last week that the authorities in the United Kingdom had made an arrest in the death of Adam Johnson, who died tragically while playing hockey for the Nottingham Panthers. And while names or a name has not been released, it has been declared that the suspect was arrested on suspicion of manslaughter. Without providing the name ourselves, because I actually don't know the legal ramifications at this point, if we were to.
Yeah.
It is the result of an investigation of what occurred on the ice. And I think this issue also speaks loudly to how there is an extremely gray area as to violence in the game of hockey, not just in the UK, but worldwide. And we've seen that occur here locally in Vancouver with Todd Bertuzzi in the Steve Moore incident, who was taken to court. You know, I view this as being very similar to that, where there's this belief that justice is served in the sport through a quasi-judicial process that doesn't follow the same due process that justice does outside of the boundaries of sport. And then the gray area occurs when something like this cannot be ignored. If you or I, through our actions, were to harm someone on the street.
Yeah.
You know, there are ramifications to that that can impact us. And I see that as being the same here. But I am not a lawyer. I don't claim to be a lawyer. I've tried to get Sam to be my lawyer, but if you've read her social media profile, she declares quite visibly, I am not your lawyer. Mm-hmm. I thought I might be an exception. But your thoughts here, Anna?
To me, I guess it was just disappointing to see that. I mean, it's such an incredibly traumatizing thing to happen to Adam Johnson's teammates, his family, his friends, but also to the player who was involved in that accident and also all the crowd that was there. I don't know about the law, like you said. I don't know what exactly other responsibilities here are in the minutiae, but I do want to think that it's just, I don't know if it's helping any of Adam's family to see this, because this player involved in this accident, and it, you know, that's what everyone, including Adam's teammates, have said. It was just a terrible, tragic accident. He's not going to live his life without consequences of what happened, legal or not. Like, that's going to be part of his life forever. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really difficult thing. And I don't think that, yeah, pushing this into a legal area is really helpful for anyone's healing, which is going to be a horrible and trying process. So, obviously, we, like, the person arrested was released on bail. We don't know any more about it at this stage, but this weekend, I believe Saturday night, they had a memorial game in Nottingham and retired Adam Johnson's number. And to me, that's a much more healthy and productive way of, you know, trying to begin the healing process rather than, yeah, any legal route. But yeah, that's my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm, you know, as I sort of said before, it really lines up to how you've positioned it. I just do understand that it is complex because of how sport in general does follow this quasi-judicial process that tends to be viewed as justice in the frame of justice. Not at all alike, but I mean, I was assaulted when I was refereeing a soccer match.
Yeah.
The police were called. No charges were ever filed, even though it was many witnesses saw a player not only strike me, but then take my flag that I had dropped because I got knocked out cold and strike me multiple times with it. So I was assaulted not only with a fist in an altercation that I was not a willing part of, but then was assaulted with a weapon. Nothing came of that. Now, I wasn't looking for anyone to be charged. And in the quasi-judicial process that took place through BC Soccer, nothing came of that because they could not identify the player because he had an identical twin. No, so therefore, way. Which twin struck me was the problem.
I'm sorry, it's not funny, but I just was not expecting that.
Yeah, it was, again,
bizarre.
But you look at this process, and again, I came out of it relatively unscarred. I continued to referee soccer for years after that. I had some bruising. I had a slight concussion, like some of that. But again, thankfully, nothing.
Yikes.
Nothing came from that held me back. But then again, here is a situation where the quasi-judicial process was deemed to be sufficient. And I don't know, is the line in the sand catastrophic injury or worse in this particular case? And then is this the best path forward? Like, I honestly would have rather not to have seen this to occur. But now that it has, proactive, progressive action taking place, player safety equipment, neck guards, things of that sort. Like that, if that had been already in place, might that have helped in the situation? We don't know. We never will. But what can we do to mitigate something like this from occurring again? It is just as possible for a player to be, you know, catch a rut in the ice, lose their footing, and their skate graze someone's arm or their leg.
Yeah.
And a catastrophic injury could be the result, right? So again, we don't know the full picture here with this situation. It's just, it is not going to bring Adam back.
No. 100%. I think it's just the, like you said, it's like, what is the best path forward and what progressive action can we take to both honor Adam and prevent something like this happening in the future.
Gambling advertisements was something you'd thrown in the rundown.
I mean, this honestly might be too big, because I do actually have quite a lot of thoughts on it. So I almost want to put a pin in this.
Stick it into next week's F-word?
Yes. Just say I have some thoughts and I have some concerns about how that has infiltrated the sport. And I think it might be worth rolling into next week because of the context of, like, Shane Pinto, of gambling in Canada. I do think it's becoming more and more prevalent. So, yeah, there's a lot to be said, and we've talked about a lot already. So,
yeah.
But yeah, so if you do have any thoughts proactively on that and you want us to discuss them next week, definitely throw that in Discord, maybe an off topic.
I bet you, Anna, someone might.
Yeah.
$5.
Me too. Well, I mean, as you can see, Anders Lau said rank mustaches, and we did. So there you go.
So here we are at the end of another week's episode. We'll be back again next week. None of this 2 weeks off, because there aren't any holidays between now and Christmas where we will take a week off. As we usually do, we'll be back around New Year's. The calendar is lined up as such to, well, let's just say, ensure that Anna and I come to you. Either really early in the day or really late at night. Just saying. It's New Year's Eve when we would record.
Oh, I see. Yeah. And I'm going to be on a plane New Year's Day, so.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah. But if you were wanting to keep track of our show, going to CanucksHockeyBlog.com, as I let off, is not the way to do it. That site is dead. Go to c4podcast.com, where the Broken website will show you most of our back catalog. And I say most because the side effect of CHB going dark is that the original shows that are all listed there are not accessible through that means. I still have them. I have copies of them hosted elsewhere, but not in our current host, who inserts ads into the show, which you unfortunately get to have to listen to at the start, though I have found a way that I can avoid having them inserted in the middle. Because, again, we get no money from any of that. So I've tried to reach out to our current host many times, and I get zero response. So we're in this weird space where do we switch hosts that we have total control over, but then potentially forfeit all of you, our listeners, when we make that switch, because we can't compel them to update our feed to forward you over. But I am hoping to figure that out into the new year. But Anna, what final words of wisdom do you have this week?
Well, I'm not really wearing a graphic tee this week. I am wearing a, Connecticut Whale t-shirt underneath this hoodie.
You're not wearing your making whoopee jersey?
No, I'm not, but it is green. And
every time I think of Anna, I think of making whoopee.
Yeah, indeed. But yeah,
you should have never told me about that team. And the fact that you...
Do you know what, who I heard whoopee. It from, actually?
I don't know who you heard it from.
I heard it on our friends of the show, Sound of Hockey. So that's how I heard about it. So, yes, who have unfortunately taken us down in the sort of podcast derby. So we must get our revenge on Friday.
Hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully. So you're wearing your Connecticut Whale, was it?
Yeah, my jersey. It is a Shannon Turner jersey because I bought it because she was retiring. Huh. Didn't realize that the whole team was retiring, but there you go. Yeah.
So it's now vintage.
Exactly.
Yeah. Final words of wisdom for me. If you happen to own a home that has pipes that go to the outside, ensure you winterize them. It's starting to get cold. Yikes. And the last thing you need is for that pipe to burst. Not to suggest it's happened here. It hasn't. I winterized all of ours.
Did you learn this the hard way?
No, I have heard of others who have learned it the hard way. So just saying, it's starting to get cold out there.
Good advice.
Yeah. Getting a thanks, Dad, from a handful of our listeners, I'm sure. I come with the real critical stuff that you need to listen to. Mm-hmm. But on behalf of Anna, A4603, myself, Chris at Lightforce, you can tune in to our show by going to c4podcast.com or joining the conversation at discord.io/c4podcast. And if you've reached this point, you're like, hey, I'd like to go and buy these two a beverage. You can by going to support.c4podcast.com, which will forward you to Buy Me a Coffee, or as Anna and I like to call it,
Buy Me a Pint.
And you can drop a donation of any sort, either a one-off amount, or alternatively, you can subscribe to us on a monthly or annual basis. But with all of that out of the way and said, we out.